ఓం నమో భగవతే వాసుదేవాయ. ఓం నమో భగవతే వాసుదేవాయ. ఓం నమో భగవతే వాసుదేవాయ. ఏతత్ సర్వం గ్రహస్తస్య ఏతత్ సర్వం గ్రహస్తస్య. సమాంనాతం సమాంనతం యతే అపి సమాంనతం యతేరపి. గురు వృతే వికల్పనా గురు వృతి సారీ గురు వృతి వికల్పేనా. గృహస్థస్య వృత్తు గామినా గృహస్థస్య ఋతు గామినా. ఏతత్ సర్వం గృహస్థస్య సమానాన్వితాన్యతేరపి గురు వృతుర్వికల్పేన గృహస్థస్య ఋతుగామిన. Of a householder. Samam natam described. Yeah, describe. No response. Say back. Describe. Yate api. Even of the person in the renounced order. Guru Vritti, Vikalpena, to follow the orders of the spiritual master. Grihastasya, of the Grihastha, of the Grihastha. Rittugamina, accepting sex only during the period favorable for procreation. To the Prabhupada's translation. All the rules and regulations We don't have that written, huh? The English we don't have written. The English should be written. Either the English or the Hindi should be written, the translation. Because the understanding of the Sanskrit directly has been made available by the mercy of Srila Prabhupada. So we should have the... It's more important than reading the Sanskrit. Of course, that we can't deprecate that or diminish that. Is reading how Srila Prabhupada's translating this. Because these are not just mere academic translations. These are translations that become manifested in Srila Prabhupada's heart. And beyond the literal words of these translations is the potency of the revelation of Krishna consciousness that comes with it. So, all the rules and regulations apply equally to the householder and the sannyasi, the member of the renounced order of life. The grihastha, however, is given permission by the spiritual master to indulge in sex during the period favorable for procreation. Since it's not on the board, it will be difficult to repeat it. Can we manage? Okay, but anybody of our administration is here? It'd be better to have the verse. Most of the temples have the verse. If the predominant number of persons know Hindi fluently, you can put it in Hindi or whatever. Where was I? All over. Most of the places they put the verse so that we can... All the rules and regulations apply equally to the householder and the sannyasi, the member of the renounced order of life. The grihastha, however, is given permission by the spiritual master to indulge in sex during the period favorable for procreation. Srila Prabhupada's divine purport of this 11th verse of the 12th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavat Purana. Purport. It is sometimes misunderstood that a grihastha, a householder, is permitted to indulge in sex at any time. This is a wrong conception of grihastha life. In spiritual life, whether one is a grihastha, vanaprastha, sannyasi, or brahmachari, everyone is under the control of the spiritual master. For the brahmacharis and sannyasis, there are strong restrictions on sex indulgence. Similarly, there are strong restrictions for grihasthas. Grihasthas should indulge in sex life only in accordance with the order of the Guru. Therefore, it is mentioned here that one must follow the orders of the spiritual master, Guru Ritir Vikalpena. When the spiritual master orders, the grihastha may accept sex life. This is confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita. Anybody know the number of that verse? 7:11. Dharma viruddha bhuteshu kamasmi. Indulgence in sex life without disobedience to the religious principles and regulations constitutes a religious principle. It's one of the 20 forms or aspects of dharma. The grihastha is allowed to indulge in sex life during the period favorable for procreation and in accordance with the spiritual master's order. If the spiritual master's orders allow a grihastha to engage in sex life at a particular time, then the grihastha may do so. Otherwise, if the spiritual master orders against it, the grihastha should abstain. The grihastha may obtain a permission from the spiritual master to observe the ritualistic ceremony of garbhadhana samskar. So, when I ask a question, everybody shouldn't speak? One person, you can raise your hand, I'll choose one person. Can anybody define what does garbhadhana mean? This is Sanskrit. Prabhupada just said, observe the ritualistic ceremony of garbhadhana samskara. So samskara is a ritualistic performance. Yes? No, the meaning of the words garbhadhana. Speak up. Garbha means what? Womb. And dhana? To give. Dana, to give. Garbhadhana, to give the seed. Dana. To give the seed within the womb. And in Hindi, the actual correct word of the male organ, in English we used to call it the procreative organ, in stiff English. The stiff English. So, traditionally it is the organ for procreation. Now it's become the organ for enjoyment. Previously, in no language of the world, in Middle English we call it the genital. Actually male and female, they're both called genital. And genital, anybody know the meaning, the origin of the word genital? In Genesis, to generate. Genesis, like in the beginning of the Bible, there's a chapter called Genesis, and the genital organ means that part of the body, like we have eyes, and the purpose of the eyes, or the function of the eyes, is to see. So like this, we have 10 indriya, along with one other indriya, supposed to direct it. So there's the hand indriya, there's the eye indriya, each has a function. And that one function is the genital, to procreate, the procreative organ. So garbhadhan samskar. Then he may approach his wife to beget children, otherwise not. A brahmana generally remains a brahmachari throughout his life, but although some brahmanas become grihasthas and indulge in sex life, they do so under the complete control of the spiritual master. The kshatriya is allowed to marry more than one wife, but this also must be in accordance with the instructions of the spiritual master. It is not that because one is a grihastha he may marry as many times as he likes and indulge in sex life as he likes. This is not spiritual life. In spiritual life, one must conduct one's whole life under the guidance of the spiritual master, the guru. Only one who executes his spiritual life under the direction of the spiritual master can achieve the mercy of Krishna. Yasha prasada, Bhagavat prasada. If one desires to advance in spiritual life, but he acts whimsically, not following the orders of the spiritual master, he has no shelter. Yasha prasada nagatis katopi. Without the spiritual master's order, even the grihastha should not indulge in sex life. Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pastaya Bhutare Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swaminita Namane Namaste Sarasvati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvasesa Sunyavadi Paschachade Satarine. Is there another kind of glass that has a lip?
This glass with a lip?
I don't want to touch it to my mouth. Om Agyanatara Mandasa Gina Gina Chalakaya Chakshur Militame Tasmai Sri Gravinima. Whenever I am requested to speak about Krishna consciousness, even before thinking about what I should speak, I remember a few things. The times that Srila Prabhupada had asked me to speak, on special occasions, three of which were when he asked surprise, without any preparation, surprised me to the first time speak in Telugu, which I can understand, but I had not spoken Telugu for the use of preaching. So I had not practiced it for quite some time. And he didn't prepare me, and in front of my senior godbrothers, and especially in front of Srila Prabhupada's very dear godbrother, B.B. Puri Maharaj, all of a sudden Srila Prabhupada said, "I want you to talk today in Telugu." So I was always not exactly nervous, but extremely humbled in front of Srila Prabhupada. Sometimes to the point where I couldn't speak, actually, even though I met him so many times and he met me so many times. I never felt easy in front of speaking, since it made even more evident to myself how much a fool I was. I always feel a fool, but in front of all of you I feel like a fool. You all know so much more. You're all much more Krishna conscious than I ever can be. Especially Maharaj and the senior devotees. Very insignificant. So what can I speak? The first time Srila Prabhupada asked me to speak in a foreign language was in Visakhapatnam in front of B.V. Puri Maharaj and himself. And so I managed somehow, but it was very difficult. That was in February 1972. Then the next occasion, I had been in Delhi preaching, and my health was very poor, but I never took time out from preaching. My schedule was 6 a.m. to 6 p.m., and even when I couldn't move, I had somebody carry me. I didn't miss a day. One of my godbrothers, Krura, actually, for 2 weeks he was carrying me, literally, to out preaching. He would lift me up and carry me upstairs. So I was adamant, and Srila Prabhupada, somehow or other, I never complained to him, but somehow or other, someone told him I was not feeling well. So he said, Srila Prabhupada wrote to me, "You come to Vrindavan and take little rest." So I used to go to Vrindavan, but I went to Vrindavan to, on Srila Prabhupada's behalf, to give him reports of the progress of the Krishna Balaram temple. And then there was so much to do in Delhi, I used to come back. So I went to Vrindavan in that particular trip, actually hoping I could take a little rest. So on the first day that I was there, the first morning, I got up for Mangalarti. I chanted all my rounds, and then after the class, I went back to my room after prasada to take a little rest. What is the saying? There's no rest for the wicked. So just as I was taking a little rest, some thundering type of pounding was on the door. Like, it was, I believe it was Hari Sari Prabhu. I'm not sure. And the simple message was, I got up and I was groggy. I was really tired because I never took extra rest ever. First time. And then the message was, Srila Prabhupada wants to see you at once in the temple room. So I immediately went down, and there, the Krishna Balaram temple room, when you come in on the left, Srila Prabhupada was on a Vyasasan in the middle, facing the courtyard, and he was on both sides where his godbrothers and all the senior mahants of the various temples in Vrindavan. So Srila Prabhupada calls me over and he says, you give the class in Hindi. So, thode se thode Hindi mein baat kar sakte hain, like itna nahi hai wo pravachan dene ke liye. And especially, I'm speaking in Hindi or Telugu, I don't know. I can't sometimes remember. So, you know, it's one thing to give a class in Hindi. Then there's another thing to give a class before all. These are all Prabhupada's godbrothers. They're so learned in Hindi, you know. And all these Mahans, these Brajvasis, they speak Hindi so well, you know. So somehow I gave that class. Srila Prabhupada kept on madding, and when I was stuck for a word, he would give me a word, you know. Actually, even when I gave the class in Telugu, he could see that I got stuck for some word. So he would give me some Sanskrit word. Somehow he understood what I was saying more than the audience. So this was the first two experiences with Srila Prabhupada, speaking in a language which was not my, giving a pravachan in a language which was not my own language. So then the next episode occurs in December of 1976, in which Srila Prabhupada had brought me, along with other devotees, to the Hyderabad farm. And I was sitting with Srila Prabhupada in the day very often. And on this day, actually it was going to be the first Pandal festival program that we were having on the farm. And Srila Prabhupada said, tonight you speak in Telugu. So I thought, oh, he's given me a little warning. But because of many other events that had occurred in Prabhupada training me, I think times he had spoken with me about preaching, letters he had written to me, some 150, 250 discussions on preaching before this. So my understanding was that I shouldn't actually prepare a lecture. Srila Prabhupada himself didn't prepare lectures. More that the lecture should be based on those persons who were there, and to through the lecture to enthuse them in Krishna consciousness. So what I was confronted with, the fact that I didn't know so many words in Telugu. I actually, before coming to India, I was fluent in Telugu, but a different type of fluency was required. I was part of a United Nations project, and before coming, I had to be certified on high school level of Telugu, reading, writing, speaking, understanding. But these are different words altogether. It's different vocabulary. So what I was doing was just thinking of English words. And then I went back to my room and I had a dictionary, this one Brown. He was only Telugu, English, Hindi, English, Telugu dictionary was by one Englishman. He had been a governor or something. And he had written this very good Telugu. There was only one at that time. So I was looking up, spiritual and like this, the Telugu. A lot of them are Sanskrit, but it's okay. So Harisari Prabhu came in the room. And to be around Srila Prabhupada, one of the experiences, or to be administrating on behalf of Srila Prabhupada, one of the experiences is that Srila Prabhupada wanted to know what everyone was doing at every moment. Like, you were accountable for your 24/7, is that how you say it? 24/7? 24/7 activities. And the administrator of the temple, if Srila Prabhupada was playing the role of temple president or GBC, Srila Prabhupada would ask me sometimes in the Delhi temple, what is that person doing? What is that person doing? So in other words, as Srila Prabhupada's representative, even if I were GBC or temple president, whatever, I was responsible for knowing not just the immediate subordinate's role, 24/7, but even the most junior person, if Srila Prabhupada said, what is he doing, then I should be able to account what that person does 24 hours a day. And Srila Prabhupada accounted for all of us 24 hours a day. So Harisari Prabhu came in and he said, Srila Prabhupada wants to know what you are doing right now. Prabhupada was thinking, what is Tejasdas doing? Is he wasting his time? Is he idle? Is he sleeping? Is he engaged in prajalpa? So he sent his spy asking, what is Tejas doing? Tejas should be accountable to his spiritual master for every second, properly engaged. So Harisari came in, and I explained to Harisari very carefully, because I could little bit guess Srila Prabhupada's intention. I said, please tell Srila Prabhupada that I am deficient in Telugu vocabulary, so I am looking up words in the dictionary so that I can speak tonight. I made it very specific, very clear. Because I can't really glimmer Srila Prabhupada, but I, after 6 years of dealing with him and so many letters, I could little guess what was on his mind, So I didn't want him to misunderstand. So what Harisare Prabhu told Srila Prabhupada was that Tejas is preparing for the lecture. He left out the details. So I came into the room and Srila Prabhupada asked me, what are you doing? And then I explained, but very briefly. I didn't go into the details. I'm getting ready for the lecture. I'm looking up words in the Telugu dictionary. Prabhupada looked and he moved himself back. He sat up a little right and he shook his hand. He says, no, we are not professional lecturers. Try to understand this. This is not Tejas Das giving a commentary, but little Tejas Das, who is very insignificant, who has no qualifications and to speak about Krishna consciousness, other than to simply, with some understanding, repeat the words that he has heard from his spiritual master. Sri Prabhupada says, no, we are not professional speakers. So my mind processes things very quickly. It's just the nature of my mind. I frustrate people because before they're done, I already know what they said, so I'm just sitting there, just being patient. And sometimes I'm asking them questions because they already confused me. So, but with Srila Prabhupada, I took particular care. But I didn't not hear what he was saying, but I was thinking, Actually, I don't think I'm a professional speaker, but since Srila Prabhupada is saying that to me, I should look in my heart to see whether or not I'm thinking in the wrong way. See, he said, no, we are, and I had not been like writing up a lecture, I had not been researching and preparing so many things so that I, and there's nothing wrong in that, actually, please don't get me wrong, I'm not trying to criticize anyone. I've heard many devotees give wonderful lectures that have been prepared, and it's wonderful because it references the previous verses and the next verses. So he said, no, we are not professional lecturers. You should simply speak from your heart. So the overriding consideration, one should of course know what one is saying. One should not just sit down and speak anything that one comes into one's mind, gibberish, stupidity, according to faulty understanding. One should be very vigilant in what one says. Everything should be according to sadhu, shastra and guru, but according to one's own level of understanding. Above our level of understanding, we should not attempt to preach. But we should also pray to Krishna that by the mercy of the spiritual master, that he enlighten us within our heart for the purpose of speaking something that will be meaningful to those who are with us at the time that we are speaking. Then I was happy. Okay, I got it. But then Srila Prabhupada said, okay, because I actually didn't want to prepare a speech. But Prabhupada somehow, for one reason or other, possibly based on what Hari Sari had said, that Tejas is struggling and preparing a speech, Prabhupada said, okay, I'll dictate for you a speech. Then what Prabhupada, and mind it, this is villagers, you know, these are remote villagers, they don't have much learning at all. So then Prabhupada started giving us this direction from different parts of the Bhagavatam, that there are moving and non-moving entities, and it was like this most complicated, almost Sankhya Yoga kind of lecture. So I thought, how will I give this lecture to the villagers? So whenever I sit down to speak or whenever I meet someone and try to take the role of saying something about Krishna consciousness, I try to put myself in the proper position to speak. So coming to the verse at hand, all the rules and regulations apply equally to the householder and the sannyasi, the member of the renounced order of life. The grihastha, however, is given permission by the spiritual master to indulge in sex during the period favorable for procreation. I want to share with you an experience I had before encountering the Krishna consciousness movement, which has been established by the founder Acharya of the Krishna consciousness movement, the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, the founder Acharya Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. I was in India before encountering the Krishna movement, the same time more or less that Srila Prabhupada had come to America. I went to India in 66. Srila Prabhupada went in 65, but actually began the movement really in 66. And at the same time, actually, we actually definitively crossed paths directly, but I didn't get to actually notice him. Then I was in India, and I chose to be in the most remote place possible, and that was with the aboriginals, a particular tribe in Andhra Pradesh, which had no name. There were no foreigners had ever been there. I was the first non-Indian. Very few Indians had been there, and had been kept safe from the British by this one revolutionary, Eluri Sitaramaraju. So what, the reason I'm bringing this up is that, you know, as I lived there, the Vedic culture was all around me, and many things I discovered. You know, it was for me a discovery of India. I hadn't come to India for any interest in India. I came to do this project with the United Nations, but I thought, let me keep my eyes open, let me keep my mind open, let me keep my heart open, let me learn something. So when I was with these Aboriginal tribes, they were very primitive. They wore a little clothes, you know, the kopin. The men wore the kopin, but actually they had only been taught recently, from the time I got there, shortly from I got there, to wear the kopin. And the ladies, they wore something like a quarter of a sari. So it's hard to describe. But they could cover their bottom, but the top they could hardly cover. But the men, they didn't look at the women, and they showed great respect. And we were trained. Fortunately, I'm very thankful for the program that I was in, even though it was conducted mostly by Westerners, but also we had Indian teachers. So I am very glad to have been trained properly. They taught us all the respect. They taught us so much about the Vedic culture, Sanskritization, and the effects of Westernization to destroy the Sanskriti, the culture of India, the Vedic culture. So, and also the respect that men should show to women. Especially I was in Andhra Pradesh, and that time the women, the Telugu women, they would not come closer than 12 feet to any man. And no man should actually come closer to 12 feet to women. And we don't look in each other's eyes. And if a woman is in a room, you don't go into that room. It's disrespect. She's a lady. You must respect her. And similarly, if I am in the room and a woman wants to come in, I should vacate that room. We were taught all of this, even though we were Westerners, we were taught all of this etiquette. You see. This is very nice. I appreciated having learned that, because it enabled me to understand. And then, you know, I was astonished, because I was living with these Adivasis outside for 21 months, or nearly 2 years. And I lived in the most remote places where they were still like hunters and gatherers. So at night I used to live in one place. This is one of my headquarters. And I'd sleep with the men, and the women would sleep in an entirely different section. And the small children, boys and girls, up to the age of about 8, the boys and girls would sleep with the women. But the boys could come with the men, but never the girls. But the boys, after about 8, mostly they lived in the men's camp. So we were actually just myself and the other tribals, you know. So then one day, there was all these drums beating and some ceremonies. And, you know, I was always curious. We had some mud huts, straw roofs, these palm leaves, tadi leaf roofs, with some bamboo around with a little bit mud. But nobody lived in there. We just keep the belongings without any locks. And then, but one day, there was one hut, a very small hut. And nobody lived there. And I always wondered, what was the purpose of that hut? Really small. No huts had locks. Nobody went inside. Nobody took anybody's belongings. There were no policemen. You see, such people, we call them primitive people. But there was no policeman because there was no crime. Nobody would touch, nobody would look at a woman. And nobody would touch a woman. My God, when the woman would bathe, at least 1.5 kilometers distance you kept from where the women bathed. I was warned, the women bathe down this, don't go this way. They have their 1.5 kilometer safety zone. You see? So much respect for the women. But then when they told me, there was a ceremony, beating of the drums and some prayers, the tribal kind of way. And some Agni Hotra was there, tribal way, you know, not very sophisticated. So I said, what's happening? He said that the leaders of the village have determined that this couple, they are going to make a baby. So they were doing the Garbhadhan Samskar. Such primitive people, we look down on them, you know, so primitive. But they were following this Karbandhan Samskar. So I was quite astonished by this principle. So this Karbandhan Samskar is the a basic hallmark of a civilized society. Civilized society. Now we see modern society, India, Indians are wearing pride. Nothing but pride now. All the modern Indians, we're so proud. We are becoming not just like the West, but we're surpassing the West. But you're surpassing the West in every bad habit. You know? It used to be that we are conditioned souls, all of us rotting in this material universe. We are conditioned souls. And being conditioned souls, we identify with this material body and the senses of this material body. But a human society is such that these urges of this senses, that they're minimized by the proper environment. Proper environment. Just like in India, the ladies were wearing either the long skirt for certain sections of society, or the sari and covering their head. And even in the West, like amongst the Jews, the Orthodox Jews, before marriage, the man and the woman, they're never alone. They don't ever even touch the hand, what to speak of other things. And when they go out and meet, there's another person with them. So conservative, to give respect, you see, so that we don't just become like animals, you know, to take the man to take the woman's body just for sense gratification, or the woman to take the man for sense gratification, but some civilization, because we understand that these senses, they bring us to a degraded situation. What is that verse in the Gita, second chapter, that talks about the effect of sense gratification? Bhogaisharya, someone know that verse? Someone raise their hand and speak it loud? Someone else, you get. Yes? No, slowly and loud. Louder? Yes. Navidyate. So by engaging in these two things, Boga and Aishwarya, by becoming brimful of this, which is the whole thing of the modern society. Modern society means that we are not content with putting a priority to spiritual development, to something that is beyond the temporary. That was traditional societies all over the world. You see, if you do some study, you'll see that societies all over the world, not just the Vedic society, which we now just blandly call the Indian society, but the Vedic society, the Vedic culture, all the cultures of the world, even if they're engaged most of the day in, you know, taking care of the needs of life, but behind the scenes, the priority, the main priority, the predominant priority was the spiritual advancement of the individuals within that society. And everything was geared around that. Srila Prabhupada explains that actually we can understand, when we're misguided, then we misunderstand everything. When we're properly guided, then we see everything in perspective to Krishna consciousness. So the philosophers and historians, they have the information, but they become misguided. But when we look at that information, it's a fact that societies around the world, they predominantly focused on the spiritual development. Then the puny brains, they began to think, we're misused. The fertile brains of these less intelligent persons started to think, well, I have a really good brain and I'm not using it for a higher purpose, which would be to improve the material things. Now we're in Mesh, now we're in the 21st century, and this started actually, it's a long history, but the real thrust of what we call materialism, putting material advancement first, although there's a progressive development of this, started in the middle of the 20th century. But when we come into the 21st century, virtually speaking, every person wants their child to go to school and learn how to put material development not just first, but as the only thing. We have to take strong warning, heed from everything that is in the Bhagavad Gita. Bhogayashraya prasaktanam thai aapritta chaitasam. The good intelligence is actually literally stolen when we focus on these two things. Bhoga. What does bhoga mean? Sex and sense indulgence. Central of which the most scintillating, most tintillating, most enervating, most stimulating of which is sex. Sex, they create things in the brain that are so intoxicating that you forget everything. This is the very perverted material affection of ecstasy. They call it something else. I won't mention the word. So it's not appropriate to mention the vulgar words. So people are so mad after this sex, you know, and so surprising. I'm in India now. 2 weeks ago I didn't actually celebrate it, but it was the anniversary of the day of my, that I arrived in India 50 years ago. So 50 years ago, it was so nice in India that, you know, this sex was very, not just sublimated, but very unapparent. It was there. Human beings have sex urges, you know. Even those who are very advanced in spiritual life, we would get, who that Muni, that he was watching the two fish? Huh? Yeah, just this great Muni. I imagine what kind of Muni he can submerge himself in water for years. We can't go in water for more than 2 minutes. God, he's frightening, you know. Even if I just push someone's head down for 30 seconds, anybody can hold their breath for a minute, let's say. But 15 seconds, if I'm pushing someone's head down in the water, they're freaking out, you know, panicking, you know. What's going to happen? I'm going to die. But he's sitting in the water, so controlled senses, right? So controlled senses. He can sit there in the water, suspending his breath. And then he's opening his eyes, and they're just fish, you know. They're just fish. Fish don't resemble mammals. But somehow or other, you know, that innate desire hadn't been finished, you know. He hadn't finished that desire for sex life. And then, he pops out of the water, and there you go. Well, everything's spoiled, you know. So many centuries and eons and millenniums of tapasya just finished in seconds. Just by the casual encounter. And of course, there's the story of Ajamil. You know, he was really very good brahmachari. You know, Ajamil wasn't just some forsaken soul, you know. Otherwise, how could he remember Narayan with so much earnestness? Even though it was accidental, but when he actually said Narayan out of real seriousness, all his previous pious activities, they welled up again. And thus he was actually genuinely able to remember the Lord at the time of his death. But little sidetracked. And in those days, not so gross, you see. But now society, all the energies, all the best intelligence is meant to put to improve the situation of this material life. We shouldn't be content with the level of sense gratification we have now. No. The measure of an advanced society is that which is advancing in projects in sense gratification and things to enjoy the senses and live a comfortable life free from austerity. There should be no austerity. There should be no difficulty. You see. There should be no difficulty. So, the important, most important part of this verse is where the difference can come for a fallen living entity is to have the fortune of encountering a advanced spiritual soul who becomes his spiritual master. And in accepting that advanced spiritual soul, that advanced devotee, the one living entity who is wandering without aim in this material life, takes shelter of that spiritual master. So sometimes we say in that prayer that we sing every day, that your mercy, what is it in English? Your mercy is? What is it in English? Your mercy is? We sing this prayer every day. The prayer every day, Guru Puja. Your mercy is all I am made of. Correct? So this is the viewpoint that the disciple comes to have, not because someone told him, oh, without your spiritual master, you're lost. That's good. That's good to be told. But one should come to the point in development in Krishna consciousness with such firm faith in the spiritual master that without the mercy of the spiritual master, without the permission of the spiritual master, without the empowerment of the spiritual master, that he feels that he is, not feels like whimsically, like just that type of feeling, but he realizes, he comes to understand his total dependence on the mercy of the spiritual master. So this is very important, to come to this point. Then when one does, should I be doing this? Is this what my spiritual master wants me to do? Is this what my spiritual master wants me to do? So one will stop progressively as one comes to this proper position on the strength of that, from acting whimsically. I do not want to offend my spiritual master. I do not want to please him. I want to please him. So one becomes Goswami in this way, controls his senses. So do we have any brief questions? Any questions? No questions today?
Hare Krishna.
Yes.
So in this verse, purport, Srila Prabhupada is again and again talking about that how we should seek permission from spiritual master for everything. And you also mentioned that that we are made up of spiritual master's mercy. That's what we are made.
More or less, yes.
Or we should become like that.
We should feel that whatever we're doing is to be successful requires the mercy of the spiritual master. And we should simply be acting on behalf of him. As Srila Prabhupada says in his poem, which of course in that particular case he's addressing it to Krishna, but Srila Prabhupada always felt the combination of the relationship between Krishna and his spiritual master, where Srila Prabhupada is explaining in his prayer in the Jaladutta that I'm simply your puppet. Make me to dance. So there's a simultaneous feeling. Yasha Prasada, Bhagavat Prasada. That is a simultaneous feeling. Shakshad Hari. There's a simultaneous feeling. The spiritual master will never like his disciple to think that he only sees me and doesn't see Krishna. That will break the heart of the spiritual master. But Krishna purposely has arranged, oh, to get the mercy of his mercy through that devotee. Through that devotee. So go on.
So now what we see that we have a lot of resources, technology, even knowledge, Vedic knowledge available through Prabhupada books. How do we come to the point where we feel the need of seeking blessings or permission from spiritual master? Because of all these facilities, there's a tendency to become independent also.
This is an interesting topic. Actually, in a sense, this independence to feel autonomous, there's a word, good word in English, autonomous, means that I can function on my own. That should develop in the disciple. That not that they are weak, not that they can't deal and function on an every day, every moment basis. One of my godbrothers, who I'm now again in frequent contact with, his name is Ishan Prabhu. Ishan Prabhu, you may or may not know him. You only have the clay madangas here? You have only the clay madangas? You don't have the plastic madangas? Here only the clay madangas. But there was most of the temples around the world, many of them, they have these clay, Balaram madangas they call. And they're made from fiberglass. In the beginning it was so difficult for us to get madangas from India to all the centers around the world. And then, you know, being clay and not carefully taken care of, you drop it and it's broken. Just a little bit, it'll break. It's very thin shell. So Srila Prabhupada encouraged us as a group to develop this. And Ishan Prabhu, he was the one, he was sent to Mayapur. He learned all the arts of making the clay mardanga, and then how to make the heads, and then he developed this Balaram mardanga. So his service is continuing on. He came to Delhi in 1973, November, on a visit, and at that time I was the temple president. And actually he's my senior by a couple of years. In the beginning of the Krishna consciousness movement, Our feeling of seniority was very important. Who was senior to us, we felt like, you know, great respect. This is our Siksha Guru. Can you not do that? He's our Siksha Guru. So I was discussing this with one of my godbrothers, and I said, you know, we were talking about different examples of people we knew. So, you know, someone who had joined, like, I was like one of, more or less in the queue of those who came to the movement, as a movement. I was actually practicing before I came, but that's, I don't count that. But the time that I came to the movement and moved in the temple, I was like number 200 or something like that. So, now 200 sounds like a very small number. But after there were like six or eight devotees in the temple, Srila Prabhupada opened the second temple. And I was in Buffalo, and very soon, because I had a more material experience, I became the temple president. Wherever we have eight devotees in the temple, wow, that's too many. We send them out. 6 months was a very senior devotee, you know, ready to be initiated and open a temple. At the very least, assist in opening a temple. Like, wow, if you're there in 6 months, wow, if you're there in the temple a year, either you're like very responsible position or you're in Maya, Prabhu, you know. Why are you not open the temple? At the very least, travel with a sannyasi as an assistant or take someone who's a little bit more aggressive. Here in Bombay, down in Kartikey Mahadeva's house, when Vegavan, he was in Vegavan at that time, he was coming to the programs, and then he just like had 2 months experience in Krishna consciousness, and Srila Prabhupada gave him initiation, and he said, now you go to Malaysia and open a temple, 2 months devotee. He and his wife, you know. So, you know, our concept of someone who was senior to us was like really a lot of admiration. And my godbrother and I, we were discussing what to speak of, like 1 or 2 years, what to speak of maybe 2 months. Like there's one devotee, his name is Gunagrahi Maharaj, and at that time he was Bhakta George. And he had been in the temple 3 weeks, you know. And so he's always my senior, you know. So the devotee and I, he was saying, what do you mean 3 weeks? What about 3 days? What about 3 hours? 3 minutes? He's senior to me. He's forever senior to me. I always offer my respects in my heart. I bow down in my heart. You may not like me bowing down before him. 3 minutes senior. And it's not just for seniors. It's for those who are juniors also. But if you don't have the respect for your senior, how you'll have the respect for your juniors, right? You see, right? Oh, I respect my juniors, but I disrespect my seniors. What is Lord Chaitanya says? That there's a secret for advancing and chanting in Krishna consciousness. There's one secret, one specific secret. Yes, what are the 2 words? Say loud, someone say loud. You can say in the microphone. In the microphone, you have the microphone. One word first.
Amani namana dena.
What first word is?
Amani.
What does that mean?
Do not accept any respect.
Yes, one should not think of oneself as important. How do you not want respect? If I think of myself as important, I think, why everybody is not bowing down? They don't know how intelligent and how important I am. Oh, bow down everybody. I'm the big shot, you know. So, if Srila Prabhupada would often say, when he, Srila Prabhupada's Hindi is actually very sweet, but it's a little funny. But it's actually very beautiful. And I used to love it when he would say, when he would speak at a lecture in Delhi, and he would say, Bhagavant Mahant hai, hum tuch. You know, hum tuch. And when Prabhupada would say, tuch, he would lower his voice, and I could see how Srila Prabhupada's feeling himself very tuch, very insignificant, you know. So, amanena, when it's the next one?
Manadena.
Means?
To give respect to everyone.
Yes, to give respect to everyone else. So, this is the secret. Kirtanaya sadahari. To always be able to be chanting. But not just chanting, but chanting where we derive the benefit. So, when we came, would come to the temple, we would see the other devotees as our teachers. When I got initiated, I was very reluctant to take initiation. Except for the convincing of one devotee, and he would have been the only devotee except for Srila Prabhupada who would have convinced me to approach Srila Prabhupada for initiation. Because when I came to the movement, I had been practicing, like I was like an Indian, practicing Krishna consciousness for almost 4 years, 3 years, 4 years, chanting and reading Gita and following the principles, except I used to take coffee. I couldn't give up my coffee. I'd read Gita some 30 times. But I didn't think of myself as a Vaishnava or anything. I just thought, this is what I had learned in India. It was very nice practices. And then I saw the devotees, and they were not completely understanding everything, but they were actually following, and then I got to appreciate them, and I thought, let me live with these very saintly persons. But you know, this path of preaching, this is not my path. But I appreciate it, I didn't disrespect it. And I decided I'll live in the temple and work at night, give my money to the temple, and you know, I had a very special thing, project going, make a lot of money, I'd give it all. But it was nice, because I appreciated everything of Krishna consciousness. So then I was convinced to move into the temple and to preach. But I thought, you know, I had heard about Srila Prabhupada before meeting the devotees. And I was told he's a really great personality. But then when I moved in the temple and I saw Srila Prabhupada's books and I read them and I saw how much devotion the devotees had to Srila Prabhupada, I began to get the understanding that this person is not just an acharya, If he's on the platform, and of course Srila Prabhupada, he shouldn't become angry and hit me with his cane, because I'm saying before him here. But you know, I was feeling, this is just my feeling, that Srila Prabhupada is on a similar level to Srila Madhavacharya and Srila Vedavyas. You know, he did such a unique and amazing thing. And I said, how can I ever become fit to become his disciple? And then I heard that Srila Prabhupada, who was so lofty from his birth, Srila Prabhupada was always Krishna conscious. Always Krishna conscious. Not just an ordinary level of Krishna consciousness, but really, truly fit to be Jagat Guru. And I said, wow. I heard that he waited 11 years after meeting his spiritual master to seek initiation, to accept initiation. And I thought, if this is this case for Srila Prabhupada, then what should be the case for me? I was thinking, whoa, I'll never be fit to take initiation. Then I thought, well, because I had known the Bhagavad Gita, and the verse, my favorite verse of the Bhagavad Gita, I didn't know it in Sanskrit, was that one should approach the spiritual master and be submissive and serve him. And when the spiritual master is pleased, one should take initiation and from the spiritual master learn the Vedanta Sutra. So I had always been looking forward to finding the spiritual master. So then I came to ISKCON and here is Srila Prabhupada, and I said, whoa, how will I ever be fit? So I figured Srila Prabhupada waited 11 years and my family average of death was 60. So I figured that 33 years I could wait, because it's important, even if you're not completely fit, you must take initiation. Because who's going to be fit, right? So then, you know, the ISKCON system was 6 months. Prabhupada had established the system. So then the temple president, I was actually the temple president by then. I was the temple president, I was uninitiated, I was the cook, I did all the management. I used to give 6 classes a day, I used to preach in universities, I used to be on TV and radio, and I wasn't initiated, I was Bhakta Ted, you know. It was odd, but it was a fact. Temple president in charge of all the initiated devotees, and I was not initiated. So this was odd, you know. So Rupa Nuga said, no, you should by now get initiated. It's time. I said, no, I'm not fit. I want to wait 33 years. So he did some trick with me. I can tell you another time how he tricked me into surrendering. Anyway, then I got my initiation letter from Srila Prabhupada. I was initiated on the Sringar Chaturdas of 1970. And Srila Prabhupada welcomed me as his disciple on behalf of the predecessor spiritual masters. And Srila Prabhupada says, now you study up this Krishna consciousness in the association of your God brothers and God sisters. He didn't say, I'm your spiritual master. See, Srila Prabhupada, time, place and circumstance, Srila Prabhupada couldn't be everywhere. So Srila Prabhupada established the system for himself, for that particular time, place and circumstance. And that doesn't mean that that's invalid. But it was very specific. So everything that he said also was valid, but Srila Prabhupada didn't have the chance to train up. He ultimately had some 6,500 disciples. So there's no chance for him to actually directly train up all of those disciples. He was traveling all over the world in an emergency situation, establishing and developing and maintaining, sustaining, giving direction to this worldwide movement that amazingly, just in 12 years, completely encompassed the whole planet in all the different languages. Every place in the world that heard of Hare Krishna mantra before Srila Prabhupada had departed. This is astounding. So the traditional system was not possible for Srila Prabhupada, although he always wanted that. So instead, he directed me, now you study up this Krishna consciousness movement from your God brothers and God sisters. He didn't preclude that I could write to him, of course, but it wasn't in the cards in his letter that I would ever meet him. I had never met him. And then he says, and in case you have questions, then you go to your temple president, Rupa Nuga Prabhu. So more or less, Srila Prabhupada, for practical purpose, left himself out of the equation of my advancement in Krishna consciousness, though he didn't negate that. Follow? He didn't say not to. So that was the way we began and developed this movement, by the local devotees. And even they were just a little senior, Prabhupada directed me, these are your siksha gurus. You obey them. You follow them. You follow in their path. You work under their directions. And some of them were just 3 weeks senior to me. But ironically, I was managing the center. But I didn't manage the center. I'm the temple president. I'm the big shot. When Rupanuga Prabhu offered me that he had become a GBC, or he actually at that time he wasn't a GBC yet, that he was going to travel and preach, so I should direct the temple activities. Our center worked by a different principle. We regarded each other with respect. And although I was in the position of temple president, we defined it. What did it mean? There was one privilege and one privilege only that I had as temple president. So Rupanuga said, you're allowed one privilege and one privilege only. And even if a sannyasi comes, he cannot take this privilege. You outrank a sannyasi in this privilege. You outrank, later on when they were GBC, you outrank the GBCs. You outrank all the temple presidents. You outrank those who are brahmanas even though you are not a brahman. Yeah. I had one privilege in which I could outrank everyone as temple president. Not that I was temple president, I could boss everybody around. Can anybody guess what that privilege was? The supreme privilege that Tejas Das had, that nobody dare take away from him. Even they were, and sannyasi in those days was super big, you know, we had very few sannyasis. I had one exclusive principle, I had the monopoly, nobody dared talk to me. You can't even think to take it from me. You better tremble if you think I'm going to do this. That was to serve prasadam to the devotees. I was a cook. I cooked all 5 meals. And devotees had 4 meals because they worked very hard. And in Buffalo Temple, you don't even think about it. Don't think about it. If a visitor came and say you want to serve prasadam, no, don't. They just will get angry at you. You don't serve prasadam here. Everyone, you sit, you serve nicely, and then after everyone takes, if there was anything left, then I would take. Except one day a week. Even we had feasts outside, 2 feasts outside every week in 2 universities. If sometimes someone, I'd allow them to serve. You have to really have done something like really, you know, to catch my mind. We're only 8 or 11 of us. But on Sundays, there were so many people I couldn't serve. So on Sundays, the devotee who, like, I would say, Gunagrahi Prabhu, you can serve. Or Ayojapati, he wasn't Ayojapati at that time. But Ayojapati, I'll allow you to serve. They said, Tejas, thank you so much. This is the greatest privilege any devotee has of serving prasadam. Yeah. That was the mood. Sevak, servant. An appreciation of devotees. And that every devotee, we can learn how to advance in Krishna consciousness. What to speak of the spiritual master. So I've taken a long class, sorry for that. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Hare Krishna.